everyone, you're listening to OC3 Frequencies, a podcast by the Oak Cliff Cultural Center. We are a division of the City of Dallas Office of Arts and Culture. I'm Rafael Tamayo, one of your co-hosts and manager of the Oak Cliff Cultural Center, and I'm here with our staff as we get ready to have another exciting conversation.
Hi, it's Iris again. I'm Gallery Programs Coordinator here at the Oak Cliff Cultural Center.
Hello, I'm Andrea Tostin, the Cultural Programs Coordinator.
And we are here today with artist Krista Chalkley, who has an exhibition on view at OC3 titled Uncertain Beacons. Krista is a multidisciplinary artist, curator, and arts administrator based in Dallas. Krista received their BA in Visual and Performing Arts from the University of Texas at Dallas in 2018. Their work has been exhibited at local venues such as Arts Fort Worth, Road to Art, and the AT&T Showcase Gallery in the Discovery District, alongside works by Andy Warhol, Kehinde Wiley, and others. In 2022, Krista was awarded the Arch and Ann Giles Kimbrough Fund by the Dallas Museum of Art. Currently, they serve as the Assistant Director and Manager of Operations at Aaron Cluley Gallery and serve on several committees with the Contemporary Art Dealers of Dallas and the Emerging Artists Support League. Welcome, Krista. What's your sign?
I'm a Gemini Sun, Taurus Moon, Libra Rising.
Ooh. Andrea?
Fellow Gemini. All I remember is Aquarius Rising. And, was it Virgo Moon?
I think Capricorn.
Capricorn. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm like, can't remember. Okay. Capricorn Moon, fellow Gemini, Aquarius Rising.
Raph?
Gosh, and I was going to just say that I'm an Aries, but I remember having CoStar, the app, on my phone several years ago, and I had gone through the whole thing. I think I'm a Capricorn Moon. I don't know. I remember I had it all detailed, you know, the houses, the rising, all of that, and I got rid of the app, and so I forgot, but I'm in Aries.
Yeah, we need to be a little bit more invested in this over
here.
Yeah,
we need to.
Apologies to all of the people who are invested, and we're just over here not.
Well, some people don't know their rising sign, because if you have to know your time of birth.
Yes, that's right, the exact time of birth, and some people don't have their birth certificates.
Yeah, or they're not on their birth certificate.
Oh, that's right, because they didn't record the time. Mm-hmm. Old people.
The ancient elders.
So I'm a Virgo, and I'm a Cancer Rising. And I also forget all the other stuff, too. I have to repeatedly look it up. But yes, I'm deep in Virgo.
What about our Chinese signs?
Oh, a tiger. I'm a tiger. I'm a water tiger.
I'm a rat. Wooden rat? Wood is, right? Yes, I'm a wooden rat.
Mm-hmm. What's the thing? Fire snake.
Ooh, that's fancy.
That is fancy. I thought I was doing really great over here being a tiger.
Yeah. I know I'm a dog. I believe I'm a wooden dog. I looked this up not that long ago, so I should remember, but I know I'm a dog.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Krista's work. So can you talk a little bit about the tie to astrology that's visible in the entire space? There's, you know, objects that resemble the kind of star shapes. There's like literal star, you know, the kind of typical star shape you think of as a kid, like when you're making, you know, cutting out stars. There's these beautiful other objects that kind of look like maybe exploding stars, which I really love, the like really soft, fluffy objects. And then of course you have the zodiac, all the zodiac symbols created out of that beautiful fabric. So talk a little bit about astrology and your tie to it and the tie to this installation.
Yeah. So I guess as a general statement before we get into that, I think to help people kind of understand where I'm coming from, a lot of my work is really centered around the idea of finding queerness in subtext.
Krista, I'm sorry to interrupt, but on that note, so to kind of begin the discussion, could you, Uncertain Beacons, all of it, your intro, your thoughts, how to kind of start the conversation of what we have so beautifully displayed here at the Oak Cliff Cultural Center, from the beginning and conception and all of that, hit us with it.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like, yeah, the answer will kind of hit both of your questions.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think one of my strengths is being able to kind of relate to kind of unexpected things together. And so that's kind of what I do in my work. And again, just trying to explore that queer boundary and find, I don't know, examples in the real world of what might be considered queer, like have certain attributes that are similar to queerness. And so with this show, I'm doing that with zodiac signs and astrology in general, just this idea that there's this immediate, I don't know, some people have this block to it and, mm-hmm. and not just looking into it and saying, no, I don't know if I believe in that. It's like this immediate rejection without any kind of wanting to look into it at all, which is, I don't know, I think pretty ironic in my view, because a lot of the kind of arguments against queerness and against astrology are that it's like based in science, but science is all about, you know, like being willing to be wrong and looking for more information and adjusting your viewpoint after you've done this exploration.
It's about questioning.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of where I started with this relation to zodiac and queerness, and the title comes in Uncertain Beacons, because just thinking about, yeah, science and how just our views in general as society are really set in stone and just, yeah, prevent any kind of conversation around these two topics and how we're using those to guide our life and guide how we're building this society. And so that's where the title comes in, Uncertain Beacons, like we're being led by things that aren't certain, even though we like to pretend they are.
Mm-hmm. Our brains like certainty.
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to have an answer than a question.
Yes. That's leading me to think about your research in astrology and something when we talked unrelated to our conversation today, before our conversation today, about when astrology was considered one of the great sciences. And if you weren't well versed in astrology, then you weren't even considered a serious person. Can you talk a little bit about that in your research?
Yeah, definitely. This is kind of something that I was looking into kind of during the production of the work. So I already had the concept, but the more I found out, the more kind of likenesses I found between astrology and queerness and this idea that astrology was once just held in high regard. And then around the time of the Renaissance, when the church started kind of really taking control over public opinion, public views, how people see the world. They started to really make an effort to discredit astrology. And there weren't really any like studies that were done that led to the fall of astrology as a practice. It was pretty much all coming from the church and this kind of threat of, they were worried if, you know, if this is a thing, it might threaten people's idea of God and the church. And that relates to queerness because the church is definitely an obstacle in society's understanding of that. And so it's this kind of idea of stopping a conversation before it's ever being had, and a little bit of preconceived bias.
That's it's interesting in talking about things like that, because I mean, one, it feels like in modern times like today, it's a lot easier to have conversations like this. And at the same time, it seems like it becomes even more difficult to have conversations like that with, you know, some of our neighbors or community members that might need to engage more than others in a constructive conversation. But, you know, historically, thinking of the church as this just overpowering force, whether it's political or, you know, whatever the motivation was to say, hey, we cannot be threatened by this, by that, and just the kind of influence that they were able to just blanket so many societies with, which I think, you know, leads us to have the conversations we're having now, where we're just now kind of scratching the surface of the ability of a community being able to say, hey, this was this construct of thinking was done for this reason. So let's open our mind a little bit and try to understand this thing from you know, a point of logic rather than someone who decided that they wanted all the power.
Totally. And I think that's why I'm a little bit subtle in the way that I address these topics, is because I want it to be accessible for these people who may not have that conversation if they knew what it was about. One of my kind of really big influences as an artist is Felix Gonzalez Torres, because he was truly a master of that, of like making somebody really deep into the conversation before they even know what it's about, and really just completely transforming their view with such minimal materials and such minimal direct reference to what he was talking about.
I'm sorry, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so can we talk about the materials that you use and talk about how you see the materials as like having a queerness to them?
Yeah. Well, so I guess a good place to start would be my fabric pieces, because I've been working in textile pretty much since I've been practicing as a serious artist. I kind of had a printmaking background in college, but right after I graduated was when I started working with textiles. And there was a familiar part of that to me because my grandmas have sewn, and I just remember like seeing their sewing closets full of buttons and patterns and fabric and being just like so enthralled. But also, I think what really drew me to fibers in the first place was this gendered, it's steeped in gendered history, and also this like preconceived notion that craft is not fine art. And so I was really interested in exploring that and challenging that. I guess talking about more specifically the fabric pieces in the show, they have been developed through my background in silkscreen and printmaking. because it's basically what you would do in a silk screen, and each layer of translucent fabric is basically a different layer of ink that you would put down on the print. So it's just a different layering technique to combine colors and make different combinations. Yeah.
Yes. Excuse me. So along that leads me to ask specifically about the RGB color layering. Is that what you're referring to when you're talking about the ink layering?
Yes. Yeah. CMYK, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. And that's kind of where I first started doing this kind of work. It was solely in those kind of color schemes. But recently I've kind of branched out to just layer different colors. Like these are in the show, three different shades of blue.
Really cool. Really cool.
When you were getting ready for, when we first met officially at your studio and talked about your work, and then you had this idea, which I was so excited about and happy to offer you the space to do it here at OC3. And I kind of want to hear you talk a little bit about process, but I'm interested in how you kind of formulated, like how you would lay out the space and really kind of creating this, like a different kind of energy through the way that you installed all of the objects. Because it really does change the space, and then the way that you worked with the light and shadow as well.
Yeah. I think the way that I usually approach bodies of work is always that they really have a strong relationship together, not just that they're talking about the same theme, but that their placement is very important to their meaning and the meaning of the entire show. So like building these environments out of like individual pieces put together. And that's kind of something I've been really working on growing towards. And I kind of did it in my first solo exhibition, but I think this show really is a further step out into that direction. So that's kind of how I first conceptualize things. It's always with placement very much in mind. And the way that I was kind of coming up with this placement and this idea, it actually hit me a month or so ago that I think these ideas first came to me probably around 2019 on my honeymoon. Actually, we went to Big Bend and we did a lot of visiting. Like you can see the entire Milky Way out there, and it is incredible and magical, and I can't recommend it enough. So there's a lot of like gazing up at the stars and like just thinking about your place in the universe. And we also went to McDonald Observatory, which I also highly, highly recommend. And they had what they call, I believe, a star party. And it's where they will take high powered lasers and point them to the sky and point out different constellations and talk about the histories of them. And then towards the end of the night, they also have these telescopes all set up, pointed at whatever is really kind of prominent in the sky that night. And so we got to see Saturn and its rings that night, which was incredibly special. And we also went to the Chinati Foundation in Marfa. And I'm usually not the biggest fan of minimalism, but it felt like the Donald Judd pieces felt like I really should pay more attention to them, especially in that kind of landscape. And if you've ever been there, there's these two massive buildings full of metal Donald Judd sculptures, and they're all roughly a cube, but with different kind of faces on them. And I, for whatever reason, decided that I was going to look through each of these cubes wherever the hole was, like as if Donald was telling me a direction to look in the landscape. And that kind of got a little bit crazy towards the end of the buildings, because there's probably like 200. And I you know, had started, so I was like, I refuse to stop now. So I just had a lot of this kind of like moving my body to see a specific perspective. Mm-hmm. And then I felt that kind of reflected in when we were looking through the telescopes. It's like you have to align yourself to see a very specific perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I always kind of wanted to make work about that, but kind of like put it in the memory bank and never really revisited it. And then I was doing a lot of reflection on astrology and kind of came up with this idea and totally forgot about all of that. But it definitely was very influential in the work, because the first kind of iteration of this idea, I was really wanting the stars to be in specific locations so that if you stand kind of like the telescope in one specific spot, they align with the fabric pieces, which was a little bit unrealistic. But I still think, you know, the concept is still there, and that's kind of how it all came together.
And you, to me, when you were installing, it seemed very methodical, because you even had, like, I saw like a sheet of notes, and like with there was some math involved. So I think that you really did have a method to it, and even if you didn't, you know, end up having those exactly aligned, I feel like there is, you know, like there is a lot of math in astrology. There's a lot of math in astronomy and in science, and in art.
Yeah. Yeah, there were methods for sure. So there's not exact divisions of each zodiac sign, which is reflective of like the actual sky. There's no defining line of like what is this constellation or that. But I made sure that the number of stars in the constellation in the fabric pieces lined up with the number of stars roughly in the area around that fabric piece in the gallery. So they all had numbers, and since the disco ball, the big one in the middle, represents the sun that all the constellations orbit around, I wanted to have little mini disco balls to stand in for the brightest stars of each constellation, just, you know, making reference back to that. You know, the sun is so important to us, but when you look at the grand scheme of themes, it's just a giant star, and that's closest to us. And so on top of that, just kind of dividing the different kinds of stars that I made somewhat evenly around each zodiac sign, so that there was that visual difference, and making sure, you know, I feel like some of the stars are stronger than others, and so making sure each sign got their due honoring of the stars, making sure they get some special ones in there.
This is bringing up for me another conversation we had the night of your opening, where and you talking about the constellations and being at the McDonald Observatory, it's making me think about where you mentioned the different peoples and civilizations that had constellation stories. And in your research coming across, I think this may be taking it a little bit back to what we were talking about earlier, but how the Greek astrology became the predominant face of the discipline of astrology.
Yeah. So that was actually in reference to, I was speaking about an artist named Renee Trevino, who incidentally will have pieces in the next show at OC3. Yes. Because that's, he has some constellation pieces, mm-hmm. That were in the recent show I curated at Aaron Cluley Gallery that was specifically referencing that. And yeah, he's, a lot of his practice is just thinking about, yeah, I guess perspective as well, but he talks about like heroes and who we perceive as heroes and why and what kind of like historical influence is involved in that, and kind of rethinking history to reflect his own heritage. And so those specific pieces that I was referencing, he took the same constellation kind of groupings that we're used to, but renamed them with the Loteria bingo names. So it's a really wonderful series of work that you should definitely look at. And I feel like, yeah, may have influenced this work. Who knows?
Yeah, I remember seeing Renee's work, reference the constellations. They're like prints, I think, at the old space in the, at Aaron Cluley's first space. And I just remember being like really in awe of that work. So I'm so glad to see that support for that work. And then also super excited. Thank you so much for working with us to help lend that work of, yeah, Renee's.
Absolutely.
Maybe we can talk a little bit more about the ideas going forward in your practice and like what you're thinking about in your future installations or in your I know that you've applied to grad school, and I'm curious about that too. super excited for you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm super excited as well. I think just what I'm really aiming to do in grad school and in the future with my work is continuing this kind of pushing the work from kind of just on the wall to be these like interactive installations that work together as a whole. So continuing that and just learning a little bit more processes that I can kind of supplement with the fibers. Like these ceramic stars are actually the first ceramics I've ever made, and I really, really enjoyed them and definitely want to explore more ceramics. But as for future installations, I'm actually just started gearing up to work on a show that I have coming up at Art League Houston. Yeah, I'm so excited. Next spring, I believe February. And so it's still kind of with that idea of like relating queerness to things. And this one specifically will relate queerness to Christianity and the church. So, and it will be definitely an open conversation like this show is. But I can see how some people might take issue with the show. So it'll be really interesting to see how things play out.
We'll have to drive down, do a little trip, and see that.
Yes.
Show. So I, when you were talking on, I was just thinking about you as a person, and I was curious about, like, you're making this work, and if you see yourself as like a beacon for other people.
I mean, that's what I hope to be. Yeah. yeah, I don't know if I can claim that title, but I think that's what, you know, every artist kind of hopes to be, that, you know, they can lend a little insight and maybe, I don't know, change someone's mind or inspire someone. Mm-hmm.
I will say that the impact of your show was felt, and so I would definitely say you're a beacon. and especially after hearing you talk about your experience, like a big band at Marfa with the observatory, all of that translates to the experience I have walking into the gallery. And I will say that at different parts of the day, when I walk in, when I walk out, you know, we had an event a few weeks ago and we left the cultural center. I want to say it was like 9 or 10 p.m. and Iris had turned off the lights and it looked completely different in there. And I had to walk in because I hadn't gone in there. And so, you know, just those three, those, that brief little moment of a set of lights going off provides like a perspective that I didn't take in right away. But there's this idea of being transported. There's this immense, overwhelming sensation of, man, I'm walking into a building that I've been walking into for 10 years, but I am processing this idea of I am a tiny dot on a tiny dot, pale blue earth, you know, all that stuff. And so, yes, I would say that you are very much a beacon for our community.
Thank you. That's really sweet. that actually reminded me, I think Iris maybe asked about the shadows in the work, and I wanted to speak to that a little bit. So when I was first envisioning the show, I definitely was thinking of shadows, but I was only thinking of the shadows of the hanging mechanism, which is kind of like crossed ropes, and also the thread that was holding the objects, and somehow didn't really think about the shadows of the objects. So that was such a nice surprise. But I was really interested in making those ropes of the hanging system and what's holding up these pieces really visible, because it kind of relates to my work. I'm really honest about the fact that they're sewn. Like, I show the threads very specifically and intentionally, and I wanted to relate that to the installation, but also just thinking about when you think about like Photoshop, and there's it's like a translucent layer, or maybe people's depiction of space and unexplored kind of spaces, there's a lot of grids that are used. And so I really wanted that kind of the image of those ropes to kind of mimic that kind of grid and that kind of idea that there's things beyond what I have depicted in this show and beyond what we can comprehend in the universe. And then also just that relation to things seeming a little precarious, because that is always our reality. We are in such a very niche ecosystem anywhere we go, but especially on our little planet Earth.
Yes.
And so I liked that kind of feeling of precariousness, but also delicacy and care.
Yeah, and you've kind of, the way that you've installed all of the objects in the installation, you've created this kind of layering, and you're talking about the grid. So the grid is like one layer, and then another level is another layer. And then you kind of like, so when you, when the viewer, when I'm walking into the space, I'm forced to interact and kind of move around the space. So I'm really interested too. And you can talk about it as much as you want or however important it is to you. But I'm really interested in how, like, you thought about how you wanted the viewer to move through the space, and And if you wanted it to be like, because some of them, like I, you know, admittedly hit my head on a couple times when I was sweeping right after you finished the install. I think you caught me doing that, hitting my head on the crystals. I'm glad I didn't break anything. But so it's sort of like you're confronting the viewer too. So I kind of want to talk about that, like a kind of confrontation, but it's like a kind of invitation at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. So that reminds me of kind of the first visual I had of the installation. It was initially going to be even more haphazardous, and I quickly realized that that was just not going to be realistic, because I wanted kind of ropes on both the top and the bottom of the fabric pieces, and that they would extend to like the far sides of the walls and throughout the gallery. And so it would be this kind of like obstacle, almost like climbing through lasers in a movie about someone stealing art from a museum, but like through the art. And that was what was intended. But yes, I realized that that would not be realistic or accessible to some people. So, I kind of altered it to this, this iteration now. And I still wanted, there to be some kind of direct interaction, some kind of like physically making you move through the space.
Well, this line of thinking is bringing up for me, going back to your curatorial work, can you kind of compare and contrast your thinking into creating installation versus curating a show?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely am super thankful to Aaron for giving me the opportunity to curate, because I really do think it had a really big influence on me as an artist and really helped me visualize and think a little bit differently, and just grow in general. But I believe you're probably wanting to make reference to the show that I curated, my first curatorial project, $3 Bill, that was at Cluely Projects, because it was very installation-based, featuring Chuck and George, otherwise known as the Bryans, and Colton James White, who is also a performance artist. So there was installation and performance. I would say they're going to be so happy to hear this, but I would say the Bryans are definitely a big influence in my practice, and just the way that they think about installation as really expansive and immersive and just really out of the box. And I would say some other influences along the lines of Chuck and George and the Bryans are Hyde Fontenot, because he does a lot of the similar things, and Celia Eberle, who I'm always just in awe by, because she does a lot of that too. I don't know if anyone saw her show at the Nasher, but it was brilliant.
It was really brilliant.
Yeah, and I'm really thinking about the way that all of those people are using space, and not only using space, but using this space to influence the meaning of the work.
Yeah. You can see that thread through both of the shows that I saw that you curated, which, yeah, fabulous, fantastic. And and your own work. I love that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Well, are there any specific expressions of other artists' shows or films or books or poetry or anything that's you're connecting to these days?
Yeah. So I feel like a lot of times my the influences that I'm most aware of are usually not visual artists, just because you know, if you're working in the same medium, I don't know. I want to keep some distance because I don't want to subconsciously like adapt some of their ideas. But also I kind of enjoy looking at a different medium and kind of thinking about how they did that within their own confines of whatever they choose to, however they choose to create, and seeing how I could maybe relate that to my own practice. So I like the kind of challenge of mm-hmm. that. And one of my really big influences in my work is definitely Perfume Genius, my favorite band. especially like a lot of the music videos and a lot of the really kind of like soft ballads are just such beautiful, beautiful, excruciatingly beautiful expressions of emotion. And he's just so good at emoting. And I really admire that. And a lot of it is like definitely unabashedly queer. And then some other influences are Ocean Vuong, the writer and poet, and just like reading queer theory and other kind of musicians and song lyrics that kind of make their way into the work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Ocean Vuong. Oh my goodness. I gotta share an interview with you if I haven't already.
Yes, please do.
So good.
Yeah. I actually I think it was Seattle Arts and Letters. No, that's the DMA name. Similar organization, but in Seattle. They did a interview where Perfume Genius was interviewing Ocean Vuong, and I got to hear that, and it was completely magical. It was like Ocean talking about how he creates and like how he approaches his work, and then Perfume Genius kind of leading the discussion. So that was super magical.
Wow.
I have the whole thing recorded somewhere.
We can Google that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Cool. Is there anything else you want to talk about or share with us? I feel like a lot of the times when we do these, we're listening, and as a staff, we're like processing and thinking, oh man, follow up. Check up Google. What am I gonna look at? Because I have like a list aside from the notes on the recording. But like, you know, we've been talking about observatories and Big Bend. And when you said that you would recommend it because you can see the Milky Way, I was like, I need to be there right now.
Yes, right. It is. Oh my gosh, I honestly don't think I've been in a more magical place than Big Bend. Yeah, it's incredible. I can't recommend it enough.
Noted. Yes. Duly noted. Yeah.
Any place out in the middle of nowhere where there's not a lot of man-made light is, I think, really special. And that you know, Southwest Texas has a sort of, you know, even like Marfa, when you were talking about Marfa and Chinati earlier, I just was like, yes. And and I think one of the reasons why Donald Judd's work works so well there is because of that vast space and the light that's so, the light is just different there.
Yes.
And I think the light is just different in Big Bend, you know, the natural light that you are getting. And I can see like that connection between the wonder that you feel when you go to places like that and then the wonder that you feel whenever someone walks into your installation. So I think you really accomplished something very special. I keep saying special. Sorry.
Thank you.
No. It's very special.
Yeah.
It's special.
And I think that kind of reminds me of like another through line in a lot of my work is just, yes, relating things to queerness, but a lot of it has to do with relating things to nature and the natural world, mm-hmm. Because especially spaces like Big Bend, where it's kind of been untouched for the most part by civilization as much as you can really these days. And you can really feel that like connection to the world and the landscape that I'm sure was more prevalent before all of this technology and construction, which does ease our lives a little bit. But yeah, some things are lost.
Yeah, that makes me wonder, did y'all also enjoy the special type of silence that mm-hmm. is in that area?
Absolutely. So we are Oak Cliff residents, and we live pretty close to Davis Street. And so we hear cars passing by all the time.
Yes.
We're just like so used to it. So when we got to Big Bend, that was like the first thing we noticed before we even got out of the car was, wow, it's so silent. And we kind of, before we even got into the park, pulled over to look at everything because we were just so in awe, especially that this was in Texas mm-hmm. and so beautiful. And when we got out of the car, it was even more silent. It was it felt there was like a weight to the silence, but in the best way possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It felt like a security blanket. mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how much poetry you write, but you should probably write something, because the way you're detailing and describing yeah. your experience is really cool to hear. And, you know, I feel like the hustle and bustle of the city makes you forget about things like this. And something as simple mm-hmm. as looking up to the sky and being able to see stars or seeing things that you wouldn't normally see in the city. A lot of us, I feel like we forget about that, you know?
Yeah.
But that sounds really, it sounds really cool.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. So any other cool things you want to share or talk about or discuss?
I guess just going back to the work, I did want to make a point to mention that the location of the fabric pieces that stand in for the zodiac signs are in the rough position of where they were in the sky the night of the opening, at the exact time of the opening. So that felt really important to me to kind of like, yeah, get as close as possible to what we have, but then acknowledge that it will never be the same as what it is, because that is the same with science and the same with like our attempt to record all of these stars and their properties and their location. They're all, we have no way of knowing if it's right. We have a lot of math to say that we might be right, but mm-hmm. there is definitely a possibility that our formula is all wrong yeah. or just things that we thought we knew are just completely different. So I think that is a big part of the meaning of the work as well.
Mm-hmm. I had no idea. That's really fascinating. But it's a time sensitive work in a sense. It's a time capsule. And while, you know, it runs through the end of this month, that statement and your approach and how you installed, I think that speaks to a level of you know, there are so many levels and nuances to how we perceive our reality and our existence and things like that. And, you know, with all of the math and the acknowledging of positionings and, you know, things that you take into consideration, there is still that idea of, yes, uncertain beacons.
Yeah.
And so that's really, man, it's just so cool. I'm sorry, I'm like geeking out over this.
Really cool. One thing that I was really geeking out that you might appreciate as well, doing this kind of research, because when I first started doing this, I was like going in, finding the exact star name, their brightness, their location in terms of how far it is from Earth, which again, we didn't end up using, but it was really fun to go in and research that. But through that research, I kind of found that, I mean, it makes sense when you think about it. It feels like you should already kind of know it, but we see the constellations as this 2D thing, when in reality, if you were to take the Earth and spin it to a different perspective, these stars are all in different kind of depths. And so it's much more 3D, and you know, what we perceive as these drawings of animals or symbols actually turn into just little points in the sky that don't have a completely different configuration. And that kind of blew my mind, because I found some diagrams of people going in and kind of like going and spinning a different direction on a 3D model of like what those stars might look like if we were placed millions of miles in a different direction.
Gosh. Like if we were on a different planet.
Yeah, exactly.
4D.
Yeah.
Yes,
right? I'm like, what is that word, right? Yeah. I feel
like, you know, it makes me think about like the multiverse, or, you know, sort of like the palpability of that. Mm-hmm. It's really there. And I just want to mention too, like in your previous show at Row 2, I was reading your statement and you talked about this idea of thinness, and I think that's present in this, it's like the thread that's present, continuing to be present, and that idea of like having the palpability of something that is unknown, and that is a kind of a wonder that you should want to go towards and like explore. Not try to explain, but to explore and kind of continue that wonder.
Yeah. yeah, I'm glad you said that. I feel like I've maybe reflected on that a little bit, but not to that extent. Yeah. So it's good to hear your perspective on that.
Cool. Well, if you have nothing else to share, how can you know, the public, the community, art fans, astrology fans, just fans in general, keep up with you?
I think the easiest is probably Instagram. My username is Bone Pyramid. Yes. It has been since high school, long story. But anyway, or just, I think if you type in my name, it'll probably pop up. And then my website as well, which is KristaChalkley.com.
Yes. Been on there many times this week and previously.
Yes. Cool. Well, Krista, thank you so much for you know, dropping in and having this discussion with us. I think it's really cool. I mean, you know, I think we have some really exciting work that goes up in our gallery. And so thank you for you know, sharing your work with us and the community. But it's also really exciting to be able to have these engaging conversations when, you know, we as a staff, but also I think the community at large, can relate the work that we see before us with, you know, more substance and depth and experiences. And when an artist really talks about and shares where they're coming from when they present their work to us, it's really, really exciting to be able to say, oh my gosh, that makes sense. Or, oh man, that's why I was feeling this way. And now I'm thinking, you know, beyond what I had initially told myself in my brain or what my impression was, and, you know, have it detailed a little more elaborately with the artist is always really cool. So thank you for that.
Thank you all.
Yeah, folks. So if you're listening, you have until March 24th to check out Uncertain Beacons by Krista Chalkley here at the Oak Cliff Cultural Center. You have been listening to Frequencies, our podcast. We are a division of the City of Dallas Office of Arts and Culture. Make sure you find and follow Krista Chalkley at Bone Pyramid. Sorry, I wanted to say that. Bone Pyramid. I think that's a pretty cool username. Make sure you find and follow the Oak Cliff Cultural Center on all social media. You can listen to the podcast on SoundCloud, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. If you leave us a rating, we would love it if it was a 5-star one. Let us know how we're doing, or if you have any ideas for any future podcasts. We'd love We love hearing community feedback. Again, thank you for joining us on this. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter. You'll get to see all the exciting stuff that we have coming up at the Oak Cliff Cultural Center. And on that note, we'll catch you on the next one. See ya.
Bye.